and welcome to Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast, episode 20. I'm your host, Melissa Goodwin, outdoor guide, photographer, and founder of Girl Gotta Hike. This podcast features interviews with adventurous women, plus trail tips and hiking advice for those who want to disconnect from the daily grind. Thank you so, so, so much, dear listeners, for joining me on this 20th episode of Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast. It seems like with every new episode and every new interview, this podcast actually inspires me to want to get outside and adventure more. And I hope that it's been doing the same for you too. On today's landmark episode, I go for a day hike in Denver with long-distance backpacker, author, fellow podcaster, and fellow New York State native, Juliana Chauncey, trail name Chaunce. Many of you may recognize Juliana's voice as the co-host of Backpacker Radio, the creme de la creme of backpacking podcasts. Juliana's been hosting BPR alongside my longtime trail buddy, Zach Badger Davis, ever since its inception 4 years ago. But she's been a part of the greater TheTrek.co family for even longer, when in 2017, she became the popular backpacking website's first vlogging contributor during her Pacific Crest Trail thru hike. Post-PCT, she's gone on to traverse the Appalachian Trail, the Colorado Trail, and the John Muir Trail, among others, and has kept herself busy in non-hiking seasons by editing videos, writing a guidebook, raising Harper, her cutie pie Australian Shepherd, and keeping down a 9-to-5. Throughout this episode, we talk about how she got interested in the outdoors to begin with, what brought her to Denver, how she wrote her book, Hiking from Home, a long-distance hiking guide for family and friends, at a Starbucks in just 1 month, and a new podcast project she's got coming our way, which, let me tell you, sounds like it's going to be nothing short of amazing. Stay tuned after the episode to learn where you can follow along with Chaunce's latest adventures, and to learn more about Girl Gotta Hike. Regular Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast listeners have already learned how much I appreciate the lightweight stylings of Gossamer Gear's backpacks while out on trail. But their 23-liter Vagabond Jet is a bit like a unicorn kind of pack in that it'll also work for city life. Its integrated laptop and tablet sleeve protects your tech while riding the rails during the week, and its top carry grab handles allow you to keep a good hold on your gear while on a crowded subway car. Should your work take you further afield, it'll also stow away easily under an airplane seat in front of you. When the weekend hits and the trail is calling, just ditch the tablet and you're good to go. Like most other packs in the Gossamer Gear lineup, the Vagabond features a large exterior mesh pocket on the front, which is perfect for stowing away extra layers, stretchy water bottle-sized pockets on the sides, and shoulder strap pockets, perfect for keeping that phone handy for selfies. If you're planning a long day hike with a lot of snacks, or have a hefty commute and don't want your shoulders to bear the brunt of the weight, then don't worry, it even integrates with Gossamer Gear's Fast Belt Hip Belts. For storage-impaired New Yorkers like me, the Vagabond Jet is that sweet and stylish pack that actually works for both trail and town. As a special treat, Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast listeners can use the code GIRLGOTTAHIKEGOSSAMER to get 15% off your first purchase at gossamergear.com. That's GIRLGOTTAHIKEGOSSAMER, and be sure to follow the link in the show notes to find out more about the Vagabond Jet and all of Gossamer Gear's other offerings.
I think we're in the clear. I think I can breathe now.
Sure.
Well, welcome to Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast. I'm on location this weekend in Denver, Colorado with Juliana Chauncey, aka Chaunce, as I've heard you say many times on Backpacker Radio. Uh-huh. Thanks for going on a walk with me today.
Yeah, thanks for getting me out of my house.
So I know you just told me, but I kind of don't remember. Where are we hiking?
So this mountain's called Green Mountain. It's kind of halfway between Sloan's Lake and Golden. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice, I don't want to drive all the way there hike. And it's kind of like a web. So we came to Hayden Park entrance, and the whole mountain has a web of trails. It's mountain bike friendly, dog friendly, people friendly. And so you just walk around and get yourself lost and head down when the sun goes down. That's the tower I was telling you about. That's how nice. You'll know you're at the top.
That's a good landmark for making your way back down. We're also here with Harper and Tito.
Yes, two dogs.
Two doggies. So, Juliana, how did you end up in Denver? I know that you grew up on the East Coast, New York, my home state, and I know you've done a lot of hiking, which we can get into, but what brought you out here?
Yeah, it was a total accident. Did not mean to move out here. I used to work at a summer camp in California, which I've talked about a couple of times on Backpacker Radio, but we had bought a pickup truck that we would road trip out of and go to and from New York to California when the seasons would start. And I had been dating this guy for like 2 years and we broke up. And it was like, I don't want to stay at the summer camp on a hill with no cell reception and 30 people, including him, for the whole summer. Literally my definition of hell. So started driving back to New York, talked to them about working remotely instead of on site, and was honestly just driving home to New York to like draw the curtains and like wallow in self-pity for a bit. 17 hours in, I got to Denver. I had a friend that studied abroad that was living here and I needed to sleep. So I stopped, crashed on her couch. And it was one of those things where it was like, oh, well, we're going to a Rockies game this weekend. If you want to stay till then. And then be like, well, next weekend we're going to Elitch and you should stay for that. And oh, there's this hike we're going to do. You should come to that. Oh, we're going to go camping. And eventually I got to the point where it was like, summer's almost over. So all their leases were ending around the same time. So I sublet a place for 3 months to line everything up. And then we got a place and lived together for the first 2 or 3 years of me living here.
Nice.
And complete accident, but
you liked it enough. You didn't leave. So what could you do remotely for working at a summer camp?
Well, I was their media director at the time. I had been the photographer, I had been the videographer. I was doing a lot of bigger projects, like editing videos, and I'd done all the filming already. It was just editing. So I was like, I don't need to be on site to edit. And I helped with a lot of the admin stuff, like the enrollments, and that's all, you know, online anyway. So right. It just worked out really nicely.
That's great. How long have you been here? A few years then?
A little more than six.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies.
I know. My parents keep asking when I'm moving back home. I'm like, ah.
It's a good adventure point, it seems.
Yeah, it's nice too because a lot of people pass through. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of people that like maybe are not close enough to plan a one-on-one visit, but if they're passing through, you get to see them.
Yeah.
So it's nice, especially with hikers.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were working at a summer camp. Is that where you got into hiking?
Or
were you a hiker prior to that?
We have my parents have an upstate house near like Ithaca, New York.
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot of acres of forest that when we were growing up, we would just hike. And like, it wasn't hiking, that was just go for a walk, right?
Right.
Because there was no TV, no Wi-Fi, no cell reception. So they'd take us up there for 2 weeks at a time. And the entertainment was just to go like, get lost in a new direction.
Did you like that at the time? Or was it like you're a kid and you were just forced to do it?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. There are parts that were nice and then there are parts where it was like, okay, this would have been nicer if we left after 4 days. 2 weeks, I'm kind of okay with.
So not exactly hiking, but
no.
Spending time in the outdoors.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got asthma and like with that, I was like a little fat too. And so.
Hard to believe.
Just like very, if I didn't delete all the photos, I'd show you some. But just like hiking was like, literally not fun.
Sure.
I did a couple hikes at the summer camp when I was working there, and I was always trying to find ways to not have to do them because it was just like, I mean, it was along the PCT, it was the Sierra Buttes, and just like things around Sierra City. But I was always just in so much pain, yeah.
I could imagine with asthma on top of elevation.
Yeah. I think it would be the road tripping, because with that, we were driving all around the U.S., you know, Western Canada, and a lot of the places you'd go, the national parks and things, mm-hmm. the stuff to do was a hike to see it. And then you'd go on a day hike and, like, go see the most scenic parts of the park and then stay for, like, a couple days and head back out. So I think I got into hiking from that. And then the PCT was just, the camp was a long trail.
Would you see through hikers come through? Were you that close to trail, or?
I mean, we were in a summer camp, so it was, like, disconnected from the town, and
sure.
We'd have a day off once a week, and we were going to Reno, not staying, because we needed reception, so we didn't really see too many,
mm-hmm.
at least not in my role, because I wasn't really getting out on the multi-day hikes. I had to get photos of all the campers.
Yeah.
Every day.
So tell me about, you have mentioned a few times you've done some photography and videography. Was that what you did in college? Did you study that, or has that just been a hobby?
I went to college for graphic design and broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
So a little mix of the videography stuff. I took some courses in things like music videos and was on the production team for like the school hockey games. So I did a lot of different type of stuff in that genre. And then I had studied abroad in Thailand and I kept hearing that when you came back, you'd like basically have post-trail depression. Cause it's mm-hmm. like you're not in that environment anymore. So I wanted to make sure I wasn't getting that way in New York. So I applied for a summer job basically as far from New York as I could.
Were you in school on the East Coast or?
Oh, yeah. I was at SUNY Oswego.
Oh, great. Yeah. My brother taught there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I know where that is.
Cold.
New York SUNY represent. I went to New Paltz. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very cold. Oswego's colder than
oh my
the
gosh,
city.
Yeah. The lake effect, because the lake's right there too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that tower up there is where the top's going to be, and then you can
nice.
Kind of see out past it.
So I could definitely see escaping New York winters, going out to California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had been doing some of that stuff. I had just filmed my first wedding videography for a friend because I figured maybe I want to get into this a little bit, you know, but the hardest thing is to get your foot in the door with it, with someone trusting you to film their wedding and not fuck it up.
It is the scariest thing.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime.
So that's why I liked the video. I did photography for one wedding and I will never do it for another because the amount of stress and anxiety I felt, like what if the shutter freezes or the exposure changes.
The memory card goes bad right when they're walking down the aisle.
And they go for that kiss too. You miss the kiss. It's like, what are you thinking? So I did it once and I was like, yep, it's not worth the money.
Nice view of downtown from here. It's interesting having been out here. This is my first time in Colorado and everything until now has been pretty flat.
Yeah, it's basically east of Denver is like West Kansas. And it's pretty much until you get past the city that you start seeing the actual mountains start.
Yeah. Yeah, when I came over to the studio earlier in the week, it was night, so I didn't even actually get to see how close we were in Golden. But it's cool. It's cool that you can get up and then suddenly see the whole city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the videography, the wedding stuff, is that something then, you know, you did it at the summer camp? Is that once you came to Denver, did you pursue that too?
I did freelance until I went to the PCT, which was just like the winter.
Yeah. Oh, you started that quickly after your summer camp, like the next year?
I mean, I was just doing stuff for myself. Like I was helping them rebuild their website.
Yeah.
I had a couple of other websites I was building for people.
Yeah.
There's a couple of Facebook groups that are for weddings in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I had someone reach out because their wedding was like that weekend and their videographer canceled last minute.
Oh gosh.
They needed someone with open availability, which is me. So just everything was kind of just falling in place.
Yeah.
And working itself out.
That's great. So you left the summer camp, you came to Denver, hung around with some friends, did some side work, and then it was time to hit the trail?
Yep. And then I went to the PCT.
And did you do videos while you're on the PCT too? I know when I ran into you on the AT, you were doing some videos.
Yeah, so I had started as a blogger for the trek.
Oh, okay.
My parents were not the most pleased that I was going alone. My friend that ended up going with me didn't know she was going until the day before the second round of permits came out. We were skiing up in Keystone, and it was just one of those like impulse decisions that she made to just do it. So I didn't know she was coming until a month before.
Wow.
And so I had saw this company called The Trek that was letting people do blogging for them, and I figured this is nice because then I don't have to set something up or coordinate it or run it or anything. I just have to type when I type, and then they can know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Made it about two nights vlogging and realized that getting to camp and having to type on a little phone is the worst thing you could ever sign up to do. And I'd been used to taking little video clips and editing them together, so I was like, I could tell this way easier by just recording it. So that's what I started doing.
Oh, that's great. So you didn't give up the blogging completely, you just turned it into vlogging.
So I was vlogging for the trek instead. This is like before they really had vloggers, they were testing it out. For the first time, it was going to be like a couple of people give a few updates, and I couldn't send the files because they were too big. So I started uploading them as YouTube videos and then sending them the links. And that's how the YouTube kind of got started.
Yeah, so just sort of by happenstance, as it happens on trail, when one avenue doesn't work, you kind of figure it out.
Yeah, it was a product of laziness for sure.
But you gained a pretty big following out there, or?
It built over time, and I still don't consider it a pretty big following, like compared to what, you know?
Sure.
People that like to watch the hike. You happen to be in it, right? But yeah, it really was after I started posting it for the trek because there was no anything before it, right?
Right. So first to market then.
Yeah.
So do you ever look back at those videos now, or are they just sort of up and you have continued on with other adventures?
No, it was actually great. They had this tradition on the PCT where every year someone would volunteer to make a class video.
Oh, nice.
Hour long, combines photos and videos from all the hikers, mm-hmm. and kind of tells the story of that year. And I volunteered to do it for our group because I'm a bit of a perfectionist and I wanted it to look good because it was going to be my class video.
Absolutely. I understand that.
So it was like this project that was like hundreds of hours over the winter after the hike. And then I flew out to San Diego to show it at one of the retailers out there that would premiere it every year. But I had to go through all my videos because to tell the story of how the trail went in the order I wanted to, mm-hmm. there was a lot of like gap pieces that I needed to put in. So it wasn't just like group photos of people. So I'd pull little clips from my videos of just the trail and interlace those. So they came in handy for that, for sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
I am familiar with the PCT, but have not done any research to hiking it. I've hiked a section, the John Muir Trail, but that's uh-huh. about it. Is it like the AT in that there is a big class every year, or is it still not quite as popular?
It's popular, all right, but it can't be like the AT because they have permits.
Right.
And they limit it to like 50 to 100 people a day. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but
I think this year it's 35.
It depends on the round. They do two rounds of permits. Mm. And the first round I think is 50 and the second round's like 25, 35 like you're saying.
Okay.
I think. That's how it was yeah. when I did it. And that's how my friend ended up joining was the second round.
Oh, great.
She was like, well, might as well. So I think it's popular enough, but they don't let everyone do it because it's, you know, a lot of fragile pieces of environment that you're going over.
Were you aware of that having grown up on the East Coast just from having worked at that summer camp? Or was it like all new terrain for you when you set out?
A little of both. It was my first backpacking trip, my first overnight that was like a hike, camp, hike.
Yeah.
Camp. But the guy I had been dating, you know, we had lived together the year prior, and he was obsessed with the idea of doing it.
Oh.
He hasn't, but we used to have just documentaries playing in the living room. And so I like accidentally started to learn a lot about it just from it being on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the summer free and I was like, well, I need something that's like different, that is like that study abroad feeling, mm-hmm. that'll get my mind off, you know, this breakup. And this trail's right here. And I haven't had a summer free for like 8 years because of the camps.
Yeah.
So figured I'd try it.
Nice. Well, it seems like it stuck because
yeah.
you've now hiked the Appalachian Trail and the Colorado Trail. Have you done any other larger trails?
We did the Trans Catalina Trail for the first road trip for the podcast, which is like 40 miles.
Uh-huh.
So that's
a fun one.
Quotes a trail. And then we did pieces of the Ice Age just this past month. It's weird. It took the fun out of day hiking for me. So I was all about day hiking going up to the PCT. I'd drive up to Estes every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go find like a new mountain, like day hiking, come back. And now at the PCT, it's like, it's a lot of driving
yeah.
to get home tired. Then you have to go back to work and you're extra tired. You don't feel refreshed at all.
Right.
But something about like the little chunks of a bigger piece
mm-hmm.
that you're doing makes it more fun for me, I think.
Yeah, you get a little of that night after night, kind of get into the groove of letting your brain really release your mm-hmm. regular life, but you don't have to set your regular life aside for 6 months.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, day hiking for me after hiking the AT, the first couple years, it was very tough to get back out there, and same kind of feeling, like, you know, you're used to being fully immersed in nature and it's like these little snippets, but
I mean, it's like you get the worst parts, right? You get the driving part, you get the being tired at night part and waking up the next day not feeling refreshed. And then you get the like sweat and pain, but like the reward isn't even fully there because you're not having that cumulative reward after reward after reward that leads to a bigger one.
Yeah.
It's just a little one.
Well, so how do you mitigate that now? I mean, I know you've been able to go on Ice Age Trail recently. Do you have any other small trips planned?
So we did the John Muir Trail last summer. I took 3 weeks off of work for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had 2 weeks off in August to go do the Wonderland Trail this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the time we were supposed to get there was right when they were closing parts of the forest right around the park.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like, we're going to drive. It's an 18-hour drive. And we'd get there pretty much like just in time to find out if we had to turn around or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how it is with the permits, where it's like, when you get your permit for a campground, you can't just decide, hey, I'm going to switch what night I'm going where. You know, you got to respect the permit and go where you say you're going to be when you say you're going to be there. So that was a little challenging, and we had to end up just playing it safe and cutting the cord on it, because, you know, we could have gotten turned around right after driving there. We could have gotten there and not been able to stay at our campsites and had to, like, you know, kind of break the rules a bit.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, just thinking about, okay, I'm going to be coming back to work after pooling all my PTO, exhausted because I just forced myself to do all this stuff and stressed out about it. And, like, it's not a vacation. I don't know. I like doing them when I know I'm going to enjoy them, right? Like, the JMT, that was the third time I would plan on doing it over the summer. But there were fires one year that closed parts of the trail. The other time frame I could have gone would have been, like, 28-mile days. So it was, like, there are times I could have done it, but I don't want to do any of those if I'm not going to, like, actually enjoy it and appreciate it. So if it seems like it's not going to be that way, I'd rather wait.
Are there any other trails that you've got your sights on?
I'd like to do the Te Arora in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Pronounced incorrectly, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
but I've got to let them open their borders and, you know, all that stuff again and have that line up when I have time. Tour de Mont Blanc I'd like to do. That one's more manageable for sure. I always feel guilty, though, when I go do them and I can't bring Harper.
Yeah, so what do with a doggy when you go on these trails?
I mean, she came with me on the 75 miles of Colorado Trail I did this summer.
Oh, great.
She did better than I did. I was like, I'll do 15 miles a day for her. And, like, I had just, the last sections I had done through the Collegiate West, I had been doing 28, 30 mile days, because I was in hiking shape. That was 2018. And then this past summer, I was not. So I was like, okay, 15 mile days for her. And I'm, like, dead at the end of the day. She's still smiling and chasing sticks. And I'm like, yeah, I'm still going to go with that. I did this for you.
Yeah. But I wish I had four legs sometimes when I'm out there.
No, she is, like, her one weakness is when it's hot. Like, once we started getting down to Durango, I took her pack and I was carrying her pack for her. And it was just, you know, you could tell she was tired and, like, going from shade to shade. But the Australian Shepherds are notoriously good at high altitude, which is part of why I got her, was I wanted a dog that you can, you know, let off leash and not worry about. That changed it from a Husky, which was my first plan. And then I wanted one that did good at high altitudes, because I had a guy I was dating for a little bit that came on part of the Colorado Trail, and he would bring his dog that is not good at high altitudes. And I ended up carrying it for, like, God, one day there was 16 miles I carried this little dog. It was 20 pounds. But
on top of all your gear.
Yeah. And I mean, I ended up putting my rain jacket on and I zipped it into the front of my rain jacket. And so that way it would balance out the weight of the pack. But after that, it was like, I can't bring a dog on these things that isn't okay at this type of altitude.
Yeah.
So that went into the decision too.
That's a good choice. She seems to be enjoying herself today.
Yeah, she doesn't even care that we're here. She's like on her own little mission.
So after you did your PCT hike, for anyone who follows the track or follows Backpacker Radio, they've definitely heard your voice and in many ways. But for anyone who isn't familiar, how did you stay connected with the track?
Again, another, like, happy accident. So Zach had been doing hiker meetup, like, once a month at, like, a bar in Denver. And I was going to them, and I didn't realize that he had this idea of starting a podcast and was scouting out who we wanted to co-host. And then he called me after one of the meetup, and I was, like, in the parking lot, and he was like, so I'm thinking about doing this thing. Let's meet at this taco place and talk about it.
Nice.
But so yeah, so we met at Tacos Tequila Whiskey, kind of spitball some ideas, and then started end of January of 2018.
Wow. So coming up on 4 years. And I think once you're in the hiking world, there are a lot of happy accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like out here, everybody's a hiker. I purposefully met up with some fellow AT 2011 hikers, went into, you know, the gear store that one of them works at, bought something, checking out at the counter, and the girl at the counter knows my friend from New York.
Oh, wow.
From hiking. So it's just, like, very small hiker world out here. Did you expect that coming here?
I mean, Denver came first.
Then hiking. Ah.
So it just happened to be that way. One of the guys that was in my hiking group from the PCT was being a lifty in Keystone for the winter. So I got to see him before he went up there. I got to see him when he came down to go to the AT the following summer. See him before he went back up to work at Vail the next winter. And now we've been living together for, like, 2 years. It's honestly a great living situation, because it's like having a brother that you're living with.
Yeah.
You're not, like, putting on a front for them or, like, not fully at ease, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, you've seen me shit in a hole. What else can happen?
There's nothing like the trail to bring people, like, close together in a really short period of time.
And it was nice because after the PCT, a bunch of people kept coming through Denver and I had the house there. Mm-hmm. And so they'd crash with me. So I'd see a bunch of people from the hiking community as they would pass through, especially if they were traveling after the trail and then flying back to Europe after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just seems like Denver's a great hub to keep up this hiking lifestyle. It seems like you've really taken to it. After you hiked the PCT, how many years was it until you hiked the AT?
I skipped a year. I didn't have any interest in doing the AT. Oh, like it's Green Tunnel, the East Coast. I know the East Coast. I'm from there. I've seen the forest a million times. Don't care. And then you go a year without doing a hike and just like sit at a desk job that you loathe. And all of a sudden the AT starts seeming like a really good idea.
So is your day job then a way to just keep up your hiking habit at this point? Or is it a career path that you really feel invested in?
At the time, it wasn't anything. Like, it was a job I didn't love. After the AT, I went into sales, and now I'm a sales manager. And I like learning, like, how to communicate better, being conscious. I think I'm, like, a space cadet in that. And then you find out it's, like, an active listening block, and that's something you're supposed to work on. Because it, like, makes you a bad listener. And it's like, oh, I thought that was just one of the charming parts of my personality. So I like all of the different psychological aspects of how to communicate that you learn from it. And I also like want a house that's not a piece of shit house, right? Like a yard for my dog. And you know, like I like nice things.
Yeah, hard to save up if you're always on trail.
Right. And it's like, as much as I like the hiker lifestyle, the things that I want in like the bigger picture of life cost a little more than I can make on like a lifty budget at the ski place. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for a bit because it was like, you're looking at kind of two paths and you're having to choose which one to go down, you know, keep living out of my car and hiking in the summers and I can pay for it with monetizing my channel and doing sponsorships and things like that. Or do I get an actual job that puts money into a 401k and save for a down payment and plan an actual life that isn't as nomadic? So that was like a bit of like watching like impending doom as you're going through your mid-20s, seeing that like you can't go down both paths, and the further you get on one, the darker it gets down the other, and trying not to make sure you're not choosing the wrong one and fucking it all up. So been a lot of thought in that, and a lot of sucks you can't do both type of thing for at least what I want.
Yeah. Seems like you still are so connected to the trail through the track and through the podcast. Do you think that helps kind of mitigate those feelings of loss of actually being out on trail? Or
yeah, because I think those feelings, like it's like a grass is greener type of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. You think it's the only thing you want to do and everything you want to do and nothing else matters, and then you get 4 months into a thru hike and you just really want more than anything else to have someone tell you that you have an assignment due so you could turn something into someone and like feel a sense of purpose. Which is also why I stopped freelancing, because I just didn't like not reporting to someone, because I don't, you know, give myself enough validation for it. It got like that where it was like, okay, 4 months in, I start thinking like I want deadlines, I want to be accountable to something, I want to see a paycheck that I earned because I did something. And you know, there's a lot of people that do these hikes when they're out of their mid-20s who, you know, are married back home or with their significant other, and it's like, okay, I'm single, I'm only getting, you know, older and grayer and I'd like to find a person, and I'm not going to if I just keep running off to these trails. And yeah, you can find someone out there, but it's also like a lot of things have to line up. Then do they live near you? Do they have similar like off-trail lifestyles and aspirations as you?
Will it work when you're not hiking?
So when I'm off trail, there's a lot of times that I want to go do a long one, and then when I'm doing a long one, there's a lot of times where I'm like, is this what I truly want to be doing right now, or am I doing it because it's fun?
Yeah, it's hard to strike that right balance, and seems like maybe the short spurts, for me, they give me enough of that feeling that I don't want to go running off for 4, 5, 6 months.
Yeah.
At a time, I also have some of those more adult responsibilities already. A couple mortgages and
right, like it probably marriage. Looks great while you don't have it, and then you have it and you're looking at all the bills. Like, yeah, I mean, it's hard to commit heavily down one. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I'm like particularly like that's my passion about anything. Mm-hmm. How some people are, where it's like, this is my life, this is my life passion. I haven't found that yet. Or it just hasn't been strong enough to outweigh other things yet. So
do you think that with your connection to the track and the podcast and like your social media presence, that people expect you to be more gung-ho about the outdoors than maybe you are?
You're trying too hard and you're doing it for the clout, and you gotta not think about what they want or what they're thinking, because they're never happy. So it's like, cool.
So has that been like unwelcome side effect of having a bit of a following.
I mean, it's to be expected, right? You can't just be like, well, I want everyone to be nice to me all the time. Right? Like, that's not how the world works. I feel like it helps build mental toughness.
Yeah.
You know, you have thicker skin, you take things less personally. You do things because you want to do them and not because you're supposed to. So it's got its pros and cons.
I think it's a great thing that there are more female voices out there. 10 years ago when I hiked the AT, there's very little women-specific information.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what your experience was on the PCT or AT, but do you feel like you were one of the only women, or do you think that there have been an increase in the last 10 years on trail?
I mean, I've never really noticed, honestly. Like,
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, and I guess it says that it's not a large enough sway for it to be noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you assume going into any of these sports, it might be a little heavier on the guy side.
Yeah.
I grew up with all my neighbors being guys. And that was who I hung out with. So I guess I always just assume that it's more weighted that way for any types of those activities.
Yeah.
But
should we head back? We're losing sun eventually.
Yeah, let's go back.
Okay.
Good view of the city from here.
Yeah. So it just keeps going.
Yeah.
That's great. Looking out this way. Are those 14ers or are we not quite there yet?
No, the ones that have snow on them. A couple of them will be.
Have you gotten into the 14er thing?
I've done a couple. I've done Bierstadt a couple times. Quandary was technically my first hike out here. I didn't really know a 14er was supposed to be a thing. I just was sleeping in my car in Breckenridge and decided to do a hike the next morning. So looked up hikes near Breckenridge and Quandary was on the list. And Quandary was on the list of like best hikes. So I was like, cool. Got out of my car at like 9:30 a.m. Started hiking up it. Realized you're supposed to start a lot earlier. But yeah, I've done Quandary, Bierstadt, Elbert, and Sherman. Would have
Sounds
been the
like
last one I did.
Yeah.
Again, it's like people come through to visit.
Yeah.
And they want to know, like, what's a Colorado thing to do? They're like, well, 14er.
Sure.
And then that's what they want to do. So a lot of them have been not me instigating it, but me going with people that want to do it.
I feel like that's like living in New York City. Like, I would have never gone to the top of the Empire State Building if, you know, an uncle didn't come to visit or, you know, don't necessarily go to Broadway shows.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But then when I do, it's always enjoyable.
Yes.
It's like, oh yeah, we have that here.
Yeah, exactly.
I completely, you know, you just kind of get used to your surroundings and, you know, it's just daily life, so.
I mean, that's a nice thing about Denver. Like, before I lived here, I lived in Cincinnati for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the small city vibe because it's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
But that's why I left New York City because I was like, I can't.
Did you actually live in New York for a little bit?
Right outside the city. It's like 20, 30 minutes into Manhattan.
Yeah, close enough for you.
Yeah, and like my best friend moved into, she's in Astoria. I've got a couple of friends that are in the city center, but it's like, it's busy, it's loud, it's small, it's expensive. It's not something that I need enough for the money.
Yeah.
But Cincinnati was nice. It was small. You could like find a coffee shop you liked and there was always room and quiet, but the mountains weren't there. You know, you could go skiing at a hill in Indiana, which is just like a joke of a sentence, or you can drive 3 hours south to the Red River Gorge and go rock climbing, or hiking or camping down there.
Right.
It was just too far to get to that. So here I like that it's, you're in the city and it's 70 degrees in the day and you can drive up to the mountains and see snow.
Yeah, the access to nature, even though this is my first day out experiencing it in a week and I leave tomorrow, like I just knowing it's that close makes it seem like a desirable place for an outdoorsy kind of person.
You can get to so many different things in an hour. You can get to so many more things in an hour and a half, 2 hours, like mountain biking, kayaking, paddle boarding, hiking, anything you can think of, snowshoeing, fly fishing. And then you can also decide, hey, I don't want that. I want to be like in a downtown city surrounded by bars. It's Friday night. You can be.
Do you ever feel like guilty if you don't want to go outside for weeks at a time? My friends that I saw last weekend were saying, who are from the East Coast, are like, we kind of just wish it was rainy once in a while because like it's sunny and it's 60 and we feel like we have to be outside.
I think I used to feel that way, like especially when I was in the day hiking kicks. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I have to make the most use of my weekends. And now it's just like maybe compared to like the hiking community, I haven't done so many different hike, but for myself and my immediate friend group and like the people that are in my actual life, I've done a lot of outdoor things.
Yeah.
And more than a lot of my friends will probably do in their life. And
I
so it's like,
even most people probably who do a through hike don't do more than one, you know, in their lifetime. So I think.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's like, if I want to be lazy and sit on the couch and gain 15 pounds and figure it out in the spring, like, fuck it. Because It's like, I don't need to feel guilty about not going outside. I've gone outside more than most people will ever.
True.
And I'm not going to guilt myself to do more of that because then I'm not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's going to become more of a work thing than a hobby thing. And that's not what I want it to be. But Thanksgiving week, usually none of my friends are here. This is the first year that there were enough to do a Friendsgiving.
Oh, great.
But I like it because it's like I'm going home to New York in like 3 weeks for Christmas and I drive home. Mm-hmm. So I stay like a week and a half and it's just my immediate family at Thanksgiving. Like there's four total. So it's basically like I would be going home for dinner, right? Which I'm not going to go all the way there for dinner just to be there in 3 weeks again.
Yeah.
But no one's ever here. If you could picture COVID at like the maximum part of stay at home is how it feels usually during this week. And I feel no guilt because it's like I have nowhere I should be. There was no one around. I can stay in my house. I can go out of my house. I can do literally whatever I want and there are no plans. And that part is always so nice.
How long is the drive back to New York? A couple days.
From here to Cincinnati is about 15 hours. One of my good friends lives in Cincinnati and I live there, so I'll spend the night there, and then Cincinnati to where I live in New York is about 10 and a half hours, so it's a two-day trip.
Yeah.
But I also like driving. I feel like you get some of your best ideas while you're just like zonked out in the car for hours.
Speaking of ideas, I know that besides Backpacker Radio, you're working on a new podcast. Do you want to give a little insight into what you're learning?
I've gone down a bottomless hole. And it's been a year now that I've been researching for it. I've had help from various volunteers with the research because it's such a big undertaking. But God, I thought I'd be putting out episodes back in March. And I'm still like, I can't put out the introduction episode because I still feel like there's another door I need to open before I can get the full picture. And I can't put out an introduction without the full picture.
And so it is, what's it called?
Okay, so it's the Mile by Mile podcast.
Uh-huh.
And the little slogan we thought of was a self-guided master class on long-distance trails. Basically, season one is going to be the AT.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a history of the trail. So when I was hiking, we went past the Amicalola Falls. We get to the hostel in Hiawassee, at top of Georgia, and one of the volunteers there was talking about this story about this Indian chief who beheaded a higher-up settler. I don't know what you would call him, like a general or a someone.
Yeah.
That was a settler. Beheaded him and threw the head over the falls. It's like a warning to other people to like leave him alone.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like I was huffing and puffing up the steps, like looking at the snow, looking at the branches. I glanced at the waterfall. I went back and looked at my photo of it and I was like, that's cool. And it's like, that would have been cool to know at the time of. And she had talked about this guidebook they used to have that had all these stories in it. And that got us thinking for literally the rest of the trail, that was not that far in, about it would sure be nice if we had something like that would tell us about what happened at all these specific places. And there's tons of books on the AT. There's tons of things on the AT, but there's never enough time to go far enough back, as far as I wanted to go at least.
Yeah.
And so idea of the Mile by Mile podcast is you get an episode a day if you pace it out right.
Mm-hmm.
And it just covers what's in that stretch of the trail.
Oh, cool.
Like at Wyah Gap, for example, there was a ambush between the Cherokee and again settlers going somewhere for some battle. There's a lot of folklore and legends. The mountain going into Franklin, that specific view when you're walking into Franklin. There is this Cherokee legend about this giant yellow jacket that lived in the mountain, and like legend around how they defeated him. And it's literally like you're seeing that view as you're going in. And I think if people heard the kinds of stories there are, like there's a lot of Civil War sites that the trail goes near. There's a lot of cool geology and just stories that kind of, for the podcast goal of it just like being an in-depth history, kind of fit the story perfectly in terms of we came over and settled in Jamestown in Virginia, and there was another one up in Massachusetts, even in Maine. And that's kind of like where the story of our version of the U.S. starts. And you go to the Pacific Crest Trail or anything like that after for future seasons, you've got that foundation mm-hmm. of how it started. So the whole thing goes through seven themes. So now I'm gonna have to remember them. Formation's the first theme. And that goes into how the land was formed. Let's say like Pangaea, supercontinent, all the places are together, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear that people say that, okay, the Appalachian Mountains really go all the way across and into Morocco. Great-grandparent of Pangaea is Rodinia. Rodinia was a supercontinent that happened beforehand. And during Rodinia was when the Appalachian Mountains were formed. There's this thing called the Granville Orogeny, which is a mountain building event. And that pushed up the mountains that had that link. And they got pulled apart, obviously, when Rodinia broke apart and the Lapidus Ocean came in. A bunch of different stuff happens. And there's parts of rock on the trail, like at specific spots on the trail where you are looking at rock from that orogeny.
Wow.
Because there's these events that will thrust older rock on top of younger rock, and there are literal places on the trail where that older rock is on top. So you get into that, and then even in terms of gold, first gold rush in the U.S. happened in Georgia. First piece of gold was found in North Carolina. California and the 49ers and all that, that gold rush happened when things started drying up in Georgia. No one really knows about that. But Dahlonega had the mint and was like one of the places where everything was starting.
Interesting.
And that has to do with why they kicked the Cherokee out, was they wanted the land to mine the gold.
Sure.
And so they kept pushing them to smaller and smaller areas. And then they did land lotteries where they auctioned it all off, and they would put the land lots that they divided in one drum and the names in another and bin them and pull one out and one out so that you didn't like have to fight over who got the ones with the gold. It was just all by chance. But yeah, so all this stuff happens that like, okay, why did the gold rush happen there? Because, you know, the formation put these things there. And everything you look into, this is where I would get frustrated with the stuff I was finding, is, well, what happened to lead up to that? Well, what happened to lead up to that? And so the first theme is formation, then inhabitation. So flora, fauna, Native Americans that lived on the land before mm-hmm. we got here. What was that story like? Because again, you get a lot of stories that are beginning at the Trail of Tears.
Right.
And it's like, well, what happened when they actually lived there, right?
Right.
Like, what was
There's
the actual...
There's one little sign maybe along the Blue Ridge Parkway here and there about, you know, this was a settlement, and then that's all the context that you get.
Just between the start of the trail and the NOC, there's four different sites that they corralled the Cherokee into that we go past on the trail.
Wow.
And at the NOC, there's a plaque that's where the Trail of Tears started. And it's behind, apparently, according to one of the guys that was helping out that was hiking it mm-hmm. at the time, behind a Subaru chair. Huh. The big Adirondack Subaru chair. So wow. It's like all this history is there and we don't know about it. And you get to the NOC and you find out that it used to be one of the biggest spots for like timber in the timber industry. It used to be a town called Wesser, and this train would go through, and you get into how all the different like train systems were built, and the timber industries would like charter out like makeshift paths into the woods to take the logs out. And you know, then they get into hydroelectric power and they start damming the Nantahala, and that's how the NOC became such a big rafting place, because they worked out a thing with them where they could schedule what time they would release the dam. So the swells of water were all like predetermined. They knew when they were going to be, and they had this like arrangement worked out. But then you also get to like, there are parts of the trail that are supposedly really haunted, like Fontana Dam. They flooded a city to build the dam.
Yeah.
And it blocked off their road to their cemetery. And that's supposedly one of the most haunted hiking trails in the U.S.
Ooh.
And we walk right past it. And there's just all this crazy stuff. And so formation's the first one, inhabitation's the second one. Exploration, you know, basically, when did white people come over?
Yeah.
Which even that's so interesting, because I'm reading these books and it's like documented, like, and this is the first, these were the first like handful of slaves that were brought over from the West Indies slave trade, because they were on a boat that accidentally got intercepted. It became this huge story that started unraveling. Colonization after that, industrialization, urbanization, mm-hmm. and then conservation.
That's a lot to cover.
Oh my God.
But it gives the whole context, which, you know, you're just walking along a trail and you're following white blazes, you might not.
Yeah. And I know like it's like a crazy thing. Like I mentioned it to a couple people at the ATC and they're like, wow, big undertaking. Even that was like, wow, big undertaking. I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
But like the fun thing about those projects is it's like when you do it for yourself anyway, like I just wanted to know this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
And I was never into history ever. It just like wasn't my thing, because I felt like I was always in school picking up a book in the middle of it
mm-hmm.
and trying to just like jump in. And I was like, who wants to do that? Like who does that? Who picks up a book in the middle of it and just starts reading from there? And so this is cool, because it's like I'm starting at the very beginning of the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And so everything I read supplements something I already read. And it's like I'm getting this full picture that you can't do without reading for a whole year.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's like a thesis on steroids.
Yeah. Basically a product of the quarantine, but now it's like, okay, when am I going to put out this introduction episode, but how am I going to know that it's a full grasp of these themes up and down the trail and not just in the Appalachians, because that's where I've been starting. And
yeah,
it's wild.
Well, it sounds, I'm excited whenever it's ready to hear that. So is each episode, as you go up the trail, is it going to involve all seven themes, or
yes.
is it going to be like each episode is something different?
Yeah, so it'll be those spots on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is a lot of the themes flow in order, and they'll recycle themselves as you get into different regions of the trail. So yeah. For example, in Georgia, a lot of it has to do with formation and inhabitation, with the geology of how the trail formed, with the Gold, with the Cherokee playing out their story. And then as you get, you know, into North Carolina, Tennessee, you start getting like the settlement stories in Virginia and colonization. And then like the Civil War, there's a lot of those sites going into Pennsylvania, Maryland, Harper's Ferry, that sort of thing. You know, urbanization started in the Northeast with the hiking. That's where it got big. Industrialization, they really took advantage of Appalachia and the coal miners and the timber and all the resources. So it's just everything fits kind of in with the trail. And smaller loops of the themes happen as you're going through the different states.
I think it's interesting. History is so abstract, but having walked that land, you know, having that tangible connection to it also made me a little more interested in, I realized I know nothing about the Civil War, and here we are walking through Maryland, and you know, what does this plaque mean? And
I mean, it's cool too, because there's sites along trail where like they were literally used for the Underground Railroad. Like Boiling Springs has spots that were used for the Underground Railroad. Or there's can't remember the name of the towns, but there's certain towns that like African Americans would warn the others about going into after dark, and Irwin was one of those.
See that today.
A bunch of stuff where it's just like when you're walking through this, you're like, cool, it's a hike, and then you're actually like paying attention to it, and you're like, this is actually sick. This is really cool and interesting. And also, as a result, is people would be more informed on where they're hiking, but they'd also take care of it better. You know, like you don't want to leave a water bottle somewhere if the place feels like trash. Like if it doesn't, if it feels like home, you know, it's like not your trash can. I just think it'd be cool. I think it, a lot of the history is stuff that you don't learn in like textbooks and you don't learn at school. And it's cool because it's like, how did I not know this, you know?
Well, I think that as I've had more experiences and gone other places and you have that actual connection to it, I'm much more interested in learning what came before. And you can have a grasp of it. You kind of see, like you said, like the geology of it. That's why the coal mines are there. That's why these people settled here. That's why, you know, things happen when you have more experience.
I could have pushed out the first episode a lot faster than I've been doing it. But I like, it's so interesting to me that it's just like, I don't want to rush it and then go back and read something and be like, oh my God, that would have fit in so well there.
So would your ideal listener be someone who's actually partaking in a thru hike and walking along, you know, okay, this episode's good from mile zero to mile 10, or?
I think that's who it's laid out for. I don't know if that would be the, like, I don't know if there is an ideal listener. I think whether you're on trail or planning for a trail or coming from it after the trail and just re-listening to it, I think there's so much information that just explains even how we are where we are today, like in the country, that whatever phase of going to trail or coming from trail or being on trail you're in, it still teaches a lot and it's interesting. It's not like, at least I don't think it's textbooky. I think it's a lot of stories that have like history piecing them together and making sense of them.
So is it going to be, are there going to be multiple voices on the podcast? Is it going to be, you know, sort of just like a, is it just you? Is it?
It's, that part's being worked out. So I'm at the part where I'm scripting it. I want the episodes to be like more NPR-y than Backpacker Radio-y, because I want it to like sound like you're listening to a story. Not like you're listening to me and Zach bullshit. But then it's like, okay, would it be better to have a male voice where there's a male speaking for quotes, or a female voice where there's a female for a lot of the Native American stories? Like one of the girls who's helping me do research on the Cherokee, we're trying to find maybe like a Cherokee elder or, you know, community member who we could pay to retell the stories for us. That way it's not like me telling the story from research I've done in the books, but them being able to tell the story themselves. A lot of that's tough though, like it's easier than said than done. So it's just like with something that's so large and has so many pieces to it, there's kind of a mindset of, I'll get to that when I get to that. Up to urbanization. And I got Grammarly, and it's been a godsend. I wish I put my book through Grammarly before I published that. Now that I see how easy it was, I just
read
it a million times.
That's an app?
Yeah, it's like a program you can sign up for that will basically proofread your papers. And they'll suggest like alternate spellings. They'll tell you when you're using excessive words, like too many, like and then.
It's I've like even noticed Gmail started doing that, and I'm like, oh, I really do say that all the time, don't I?
But I feel like with a lot of those, it's like, okay, the idea is good, but you're not actually good at doing it. And this one is so good. So it saved me a lot of time in just like tweaking the scripting.
Yeah. What are some of the most interesting books that you've come across in doing the research for this? Do you have any recommendations for people interested in any aspect, the history or the geology?
There's a lot. Horace Kephart, Our Southern Highlanders. Mm-hmm. He wrote that about the people in the Appalachians and like their lifestyle and like from observing them. And it does a lot to explain kind of their feelings of getting left behind as the rest of the country advanced. And things like moonshiners, right? Like you think of the stereotypical Appalachian, you think of moonshiners. But to understand how they went to moonshine is like they just got totally fucked. Like they truly did. Okay, so like moonshiners, I'll go down this rabbit hole. You think about the people that were in the Piedmont Valley, farming corn, that sort of thing. They could transport it a lot easier. The roads were a lot better. They could sell it for whatever price it was, and they'd make a profit. You're up in the mountains, you can't exactly do that. Your roads suck. It takes days to get to and from town. The amount you can load up because of like, you know, the horse or whatever's taking it is limited. And the profit that you'll turn based off of how much you can even make on like the shit land that you have to farm isn't great, right? So a lot of them would make alcohol instead because then they could ferment the corn and that would be, you know, something that they could transport more of and get more of a profit back.
Last longer.
And it could afford them like, a little bit of a living. Well, then they started putting taxes on everything. Thing, and they taxed alcohol to the point that in order to go about it the right way and in order to sell it the way they were supposed to coming from the Highlands, they ended up spending money to be able to sell it. It cost them more from how much it would cost to produce in the quantities they could do it, in the size of batches they could do it, to then transport it to town, the cost of getting to and from town, what they could sell it at, and then the tax that they would have to pay. The tax, after all the other expenses on top of it, would make it so that they were spending money rather than making money. So it was, you know, we literally cannot do this anymore.
Right.
But the people that were in the valleys didn't have that problem because they could do the corn. You know, they didn't have to turn to alcohol to make a living. So they were having a fine time, and people in the Highlands were just getting absolutely rocked by these laws and just like cheated by them. And so they had to turn to making these makeshift like moonshining operations just to be able to survive.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't even afford food without it.
Right.
And
otherwise it's just subsistence farming for themselves. And
he even talks about it in the book. It's not like this was fun, you know, like they had to bribe someone to smuggle it.
Sure.
They had to bribe a law enforcement person to turn a blind eye. They had to keep rebuilding and moving locations and monitoring it and like constantly watching it. Like it wasn't a fun thing for them to do. And it's like, we're not really like making a lot of money on this either. Cause as you'll notice, we're all still poor. Right. So like, it's genuinely like, we're not doing this cause like, ooh, we're riffraff, we're bad. We're, you know, we're cool. Like we're doing this to make loads of money. It was like, we're just trying to survive over here. And you guys are literally finding every way to stop that from happening. So things like that, he puts in Our Southern Highlanders while he's there, just like observing them. And it explains a lot of things that like you hear about, but you don't know about in a way that's really interesting. So that was a good one. Another one, Cradle of America. It's a fat book that's a story of Virginia from when Jamestown began being formed to present day. A lot of that explains a lot of things too, especially going into segregation and, you know, how there became like an income gap and inequality in terms of how they were making the laws. And a lot of it was literally the mountains versus the cities, which makes it relevant to the trail and places on the trail. And just every book you're reading just paints the picture a little better in so many different areas where it's hard to pick just one. There's so many that were so good.
Yeah,
I could keep going.
I think it's super interesting to do that deep dive. It obviously, especially for a trail that you previously had never wanted to hike, like, are you a little surprised how much you're getting into it now?
No, because it's not like I'm doing it because I'm like, I love the Appalachian Trail. It's like, I wanted some more info when I was out there, so I started looking into it, and then the hole just kept getting deeper, and it kept getting more interesting, and it's like, all right, I'm going to just commit to this and see what happens. But the actual trail, like, you get into the urbanization part, and that's when you get into the trail building, and, you know, the different trail organizations and how that started, but that's so far into the story that it can't be the biggest part of the story, because the story doesn't just start when the trail was built.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of things on the AT differ, is that they start with the trail being built. So I guess that's what makes it a little more interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's been my free time. And that's kind of why I've been getting so far into the couch, is that if I have free time, I know this is such a big project and it's been going on for such a long time that I want to sit down and work on it.
Yeah.
But then it's like, you're giving up exercise as often when you're reading like 5 books a week and doing all that, so.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. And all the things you do for backpacker radio.
Yeah, I think I don't like free time. Is what I kind of came out to.
Well, it's a great way to combat any post-trail blues or anything like that, is just keep yourself really busy, stay connected to the trail.
Well, that's it. I like having a project. Like, when I got off the PCT, I did the class video. That was my winter project. Mm-hmm. I got off the AT, I wrote the book.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even touched on your book.
Yeah. Hiking from Home, a Long Distance Hiking Guide for Family and Friends. Big mouthful of a title.
I have started it.
It's nice because it's like...
But I haven't finished it yet.
I like writing. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book from when I was doing the road tripping. But it's like a collection of journal articles that I put together for like this November writing month challenge when I first moved to Cincinnati.
Awesome.
But I keep going back and editing, but it's like,
yeah,
that's a story about me and like my journey and like my, like not like my journey, but like,
yeah,
just like the road trips, right? So it's like, I don't know if or when I'll want to publish it, just because, again, it's like, you can critique that and you're actually critiquing me, right? This, it's like, okay, I get to write, I get to do something that feels, again, researchy, because I'm doing a lot of research and it's all factual. So it's interviewing and it's putting together info, and none of that is like, this is Juliana. So you could say that one sucks. And it's like, okay, so you're just saying like some facts suck, or like the way they rearranged or they're arranged isn't great. It's not a personal dig at me. I think I'm too soft for that still. But
yeah, maybe by the time this one's done, you'll feel differently.
It's nice to have, you know, but it's like the validation doesn't come from having a, you know, certain number of eyes on it. So I don't feel too rushed. But Hiking from Home was great because I did that when I got back from the AT. It was just between the YouTube and the people that were commenting, the people I'd hike with, like a lot of the people I hike with on the trails, their parents will follow me and watch my videos and look at the YouTube and the Instagram, because it lets them know that their kid's okay.
Yeah.
And you'll get a lot of the same questions. You'll get a lot of the same worries. You'll get a lot of the same concerns. Similar like questions that get asked at Backpacker Radio.
Right.
Where it's like, you start to notice that everyone who's not doing the hike is reading books that are intended for the hiker to try to get an idea of what their hiker's about to do. And it's like, it's not written for you, right? Like, there's so much stuff that you're going to learn from this, but there's also a lot of stuff that isn't necessary info for you, and a lot that's missing info. And so I kind of was just like, is this really not a thing already? And I looked around and I couldn't find anything that was targeted to the people at home. And I was just like, well, if it's not a thing already, someone's got to do it, right? And I need a hobby. It's hobby season. So I hadn't gotten a place to live yet. I was waiting until it got too cold to finally rent something, because I wanted to save money. So I was just living out of my car in Durango, going to Starbucks every morning when they'd open, staying until they close, and I wrote it in a month.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah. That was September. Didn't get it out until March, because after that it was just rereading it a million times, editing it over and over and over. This is where Grammarly would have came
that's
in great.
That's still pretty quick, I would say.
I mean, it was my full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't working it yet. So
for anyone who isn't quite familiar with it, it's basically a guidebook for
the person at
home.
Yeah. So like, think about every question you're asked if you're planning a hike. You're going alone. Are you bringing a gun? How are you going to feed yourself?
Where do you go to the bathroom?
Is it safe? What about the animals? What do you do if you see one of these animals? And a lot of the things
hunt for your food?
Exactly. Like the picture that people have in their heads is so far different from what it actually is, I feel like, that a lot of what they're looking for when they're getting really or a lot of why they're really anxious and worried is because they don't understand it, because there's not enough information that's spelled out enough for them to grasp it if they're not involved in that sort of hiking thing, where it seems very scary because there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah. And one of my mom's biggest concerns for my dad and I going out there was that one of us would have to go to the bathroom, we'd dig a hole, that hole would have a snake in it, that snake would come up and bite our butts, and we'd get poisoned, and we wouldn't have cell service and be able to call for help.
Right. And so, like, for example, in this, like, there's rattlesnakes as, like, a one-pager and, like, what to do if you see them.
Yeah.
And it goes in the same thing where I like the facts. So it's like, okay, how many times do people get attacked by venomous snakes in the U.S. annually? Of those, how many of those are actually fatal? You know, and like the odds of you getting bitten by a snake turn into the odds of it being a venomous snake turn into the odds of it being fatal. Like, it becomes such a low percentage that it's like, you've got so many more things you could worry about than this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that's just like informing them. And then also, I've hiked with a lot of people that started in relationships. Did not end in relationships, right? They had people at home, and like, you're standing there like just the bystander, and it's like someone's girlfriend's furious that they're sharing a motel with you, and there's like three other people in the motel room, and you're like, come on, you can't be mad at this. Like, this is like, we're all on a budget here. We're not sleeping in a hotel room because we're having fun. Like, we just want to be dry and have a shower. And it's cheaper this way. And we also don't get a choice. It comes down to who is literally around us when we get to town.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, couldn't be less the way you're thinking of it than you think.
Nothing to be jealous of a room of stinky hikers.
And trail after trail after trail, you'd see the same things play out. And it's like, you guys need something to read. So I did about, it was over 100 interviews I did. I did phone interviews with parents, family members, friends, kids, significant others, from just starting to date to being married for ages, people that had relationships last on the trail, people that had relationships that didn't last, people that started alone, people that started with groups, people that had people come to visit at the start of the trail, middle of the trail, end of the trail, people that felt ambushed by someone wanting to visit and not taking no for an answer, wanting to do things like summit together when they wanted that to be their own thing, taking that poorly. Like, there's so many things that you could get into with a book that's that specified.
Yeah.
Where I did all these interviews and then it kind of wrote itself.
That's awesome.
Because it was just like piecing together the facts that I was researching with, like, I read a bunch of books on communicating, and because you can't just say like, okay, post-trail depression and not have, you know, like scientific stuff to go behind it.
Sure.
So I read a bunch of books that went into the science behind exercising and what it does for your brain and when you stop. And I had people that had doctorates and were nurses or therapists read over it and refine it and like give their seal of approval on it to make sure that it wasn't just like some idiot in a Starbucks,
Googling,
you know, giving
things.
Medical advice. But it was like easy at that point. Once the research was done, it was just laying it out into chapters, and then the chapters were into sections.
Yeah. And the themes presented themselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice. I'm not a very good marketer. I don't really market it well. I don't enjoy doing that sort of thing. So I kind of just give it a little shout out at the end of the podcast and let that be that.
How's it doing?
Like, I don't check that much. Like, there's a thing that direct deposits into my bank account.
Perfect.
It's obviously not enough that I notice like huge numbers any month, but it's also like, you know, it's fast season is this time of year where people are starting to decide to hike. Holiday season, you know, it's like,
what do you give the gift?
Give them
the hiker,
this so that you can tell them and give it to them at the same time. Limit some of that freak out. But then, you know, summer hits and people are on trail. That's not when they're getting it. So there's busy times, there's slow times. Yeah. I could really do a lot more posting. I could do a lot more like getting it into actual bookstores. I don't even know how to go about that.
Well, you'll learn when the time comes. It sounds like that's the kind of a through line to your projects as needed.
And I just like, I mean, I like reading. I love reading the Amazon reviews just because, not even like, oh my God, look at me, it's great. But I like reading people saying like how much it helped.
Oh,
right?
Good.
Like how much, now my parents are asking questions. Now they seem actually interested. Mm-hmm. They asked me if I knew what water filter I was going to get. I didn't even know they knew what a water filter was. Like the amount that I'm getting feedback on from people from home being more invested in the right ways that are not going to disappoint either side makes it feel really good.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a through line to your hiking, your podcasting, your videos, the book writing is communication. Where do you think you see other projects coming in the future? Do you have any future ideas of like more ways to help communicate about trail, or what's something that you'd like to express about trail life or conservation or anything like that, like you haven't been able to touch on yet?
See, I think it goes back to like the I'm not like super passionate about any set things. Like I could say like, oh yeah, I've got this big mission. I don't. I like holding something in my hands and seeing like I did this, which is cool with like the books and the writing, and feels accomplishing. The videos and stuff like that, I like being able to look back and refer to something and say, oh yeah, that's where I was, if I need to. The things that are mostly research-based is, you know, I'm not confident enough to do something that's like a purge of emotions or whatever. You know, it's like facts are easy to hide behind, and you know, they're either right or they're wrong, you would hope, so they're pretty emotionless. So I think the combination of them is it's like projects like that appeal to me. But I don't think it's because I'm like got this mission or goal to do anything. It's just, I just want to stay occupied and feel like I'm learning something and not just reading something and forgetting about it. And then what's the point of having read it? Like if I take notes on it or put it into something, then I can refer back to it. It's like my own personal cliff notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't figured out the why part yet.
Hey, perfect timing. Getting back to the car.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. While we can still see. No headlamp required.
I think I don't like giving an opinion and then having other people like base their ideas on it unless I feel like I'm an expert on it. Like there's a lot of stuff where my answer is kind of a lame answer. It's like I don't feel like I know enough about that to talk about it because I, you know, you're in the mountains and the woods for so long so many months out of the year, it's like, you don't talk to me about politics. I don't think I know enough about it, honestly, to be a persuasive person to have a conversation with, because I don't want you basing your ideas off of what I say when I barely know what I'm saying. The facts are unbiased, I think. And you can also give both sides. So like in the book where it's like, do you carry a gun? There's interviews from both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
From people that would never carry a gun, do carry a gun, carried a gun and sent it home, and why? Mm. And like, when you hear someone who has done it and decided to send it home because they realized it wasn't worth it, explaining it to you in like the language you understand, versus someone who's anti-guns just saying like, no, because no guns, you're gonna listen a little bit better, or at least understand. You know, it's not like, hey, I want to convince you to do it this way. It's just, if you're gonna carry this thing, you know why you're doing it, and you know, decide for yourself if it's worth it. And here's some info from all sides of the coin.
Yeah,
that can give you a foundation on what to make your decision off of.
How do you send a gun home?
Well, that's the problem. It's like, okay, let's say you're doing the AT and you're carrying a gun. There are some places that you have to have it in your backpack unloaded.
Right.
And in that case, like, you can't just call it time out, you know?
It's just extra pack weight.
Is it worth carrying it for you if it has to be that inaccessible?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, you have to send it home from somewhere that's like an FAA certified place.
Oh, wow.
And so you can't just go to a post office and mail it home. And, you know, when you're on trail, you don't have a car.
The options are few and far between.
Hard to get to these places, because a lot of our towns aren't even cities. They're towns. A lot of it is like trails like the AT are so wet that the weapon can degrade, where, you know, it's gonna need constant maintenance. You know, how wet it is gonna affect it. If you're trying to protect yourself from like a bear, what you're gonna be carrying wouldn't be a high enough caliber
right
to stop it. If you're protecting yourself from a human, like, I had an interview with a cop on it who was like, honestly, like, unless you are well trained and a good shot and, you know, really know how to use it, you could be giving a weapon to your attacker. And so what about personal defense, like self-defense classes? Would that not be more
effective
is signing up for a self-defense class? So then it's, you know, the person at home, hey, if you're really concerned about this, before you start pushing it on them, why don't you sign you and that person together up for a self-defense class so that you can see that they're learning self-defense, do an activity that brings you guys together, and you'll feel more rest assured because you'll see them learning this skill that they can use, you know? And it's just things like that that are, none of that's like Chance's opinion.
Right.
Right? But it's like a collection of opinions that can lead you towards yours.
Yeah. I think that's a great resource for people to have, you know? Definitely may have put my mom's mind at ease a bit, or at least given her a foundation since the AT is often a first person's backpacking trip, you know, I could see it being super useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all of this is awesome information. I love that you are interested in all these things, because I think it makes a lot of other people interested in things. Probably has helped people get out on trail.
Yeah, it's perfect timing too. We just got back to the car. Sun is down as we knew it would be.
Yeah. Hasn't gotten too cold yet. That's something I haven't figured out yet in my week here. It's so warm during the day, but it gets so cold at night.
Yeah, it's the nice thing too about this time of year is like the ski mountains are open. You know, you can go skiing at Keystone if you want to right now. But if you don't want to be in snow yet, because you want winter to not happen just yet, you come back here and it's, you know, t-shirt weather during the day.
Absolutely.
It's a little bit of a treat. Yeah. Oh. Glad I got to show you a little part of the foothills is what this would be, because it's not actual mountains.
Well, it was pretty hilly for being some foothills. Bigger than we've got right outside of NYC anyway.
Go on.
Well, thanks. Is there any... Well, where can people find your book? And where can they find you?
You can find me in Denver, Colorado, if you look carefully enough. You can find me on Instagram at Juliana_Chauncey. I'm less active in the winters on it because I'm not really doing as much. And you can find me on YouTube at Juliana Chauncey if you want to watch any of the hikes. And then Hiking From Home, you can get on Amazon. You can get it on my website if you want a signed copy, but I have like a specific disclaimer on there that I like am not the most timely post office person. Like I go on Saturday, and then if I forget, then it's the next Saturday that I'll go.
So yes, lots of us are one single person businesses.
Going back to the not great at marketing thing, I've literally got a disclaimer on there that's like, yeah, honestly, like, unless you really want this, like, you want me to write a letter to your parents saying, like, hey, this person's going on this hike, they will be fine, just get it through Amazon. You don't need to do me any favors, just get it through Amazon, and the favor will be that I don't have to go to the post office.
Well, thanks for showing me around. Can't wait to hopefully see you on trail again.
Yes, thanks for taking me out of my house. It does take some prodding, so that was good.
And the doggies are going to sleep well tonight, so.
They better.
Chaunce, thank you so much for coming out on a walk with Girl Gotta Hike and for introducing me to such a great trail in Denver last November. Though I already had the pleasure of meeting you a few times along the Appalachian Trail and had heard your voice a ton of times on air, it was a true joy to get to learn a little more about your hiking origins and about what keeps you motivated in the off-season. For a self-described lazy person, I was absolutely astounded at how much you've already accomplished in the handful of years you've spent on trail and amongst the backpacking community. Your dedication to getting information out to future backpackers through your podcasts, blog posts, and guidebook has proven invaluable for many a newbie hiker, and I'm sure the Mile by Mile podcast will motivate even more peeps to hit the trails. If you are interested in taking on a long trek, then be sure to head over to Amazon and order Juliana's book, Hiking from Home, a Long Distance Hiking Guide for Family and Friends, as well as watch videos from her time on the AT and the PCT via her YouTube channel, Juliana Chauncey. You can catch her weekly on the Backpacker Radio podcast and keep up with everything else, including some very cute videos of Harper, on both Instagram and TikTok at Juliana_Chauncey. Links to all are in the show notes. Thanks a million to hiking enthusiast, screen printer, and primo podcast editor, Ash Lake, for the incredible editing this round. Y'all don't know it since Ash is so awesome, but there was actually a fair amount of pausing for doggy tending purposes in the raw audio on this one. Thanks also to musician Brian Bond for the custom crafted theme song. In need of some special sounds of your own? Email your musical inquiries to brian.e.bond@gmail.com or follow him on Instagram at @BrianBondMusic. And major thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast. I 100% appreciate that you have taken some time out of your day to come on an adventure with Girl Gotta Hike. Know what else I appreciate? 5-star reviews. If you've got a favorite episode, be sure to shout it out over on Apple Podcasts. Good reviews help to spread the GGH gospel and inspire others to get on to their next adventure. Girl Gotta Hike connects women with nature, confidence, and camaraderie through guided hikes and backpacking trips from New York City to the Catskills and beyond. Looking to take on an awesome new adventure but not sure you want to head out there alone? Then be sure to check out the event page to sign up for a group hike. You can head to trail without having a car on the monthly public transit series hikes, or go further afield with your new hiking friends on group hikes in the Hudson Valley or in the Catskills, where this winter, we're featuring a 4-part snowshoe series. While on the site, you can also check out some handy blog posts, catch up on old podcast episodes, and sign up for my monthly-ish newsletter. Did you know email subscribers get first dibs on event signups? You can also follow me on Instagram @GirlGottaHike or on the Girl Gotta Hike Facebook page. Until next time, happy hiking!
It's like you've seen me shit in a hole. What else can happen?